At 4:30 each morning, the girls were roused from their beds and ushered into a warehouse-like cafeteria with an open ceiling and suspended high bay fixtures that hung from the rafters like lifeboats. In rigorously enforced silence, they ate hard-boiled eggs with chartreuse yolks and white toast brushed with hydrogenated soybean oil. They drank room-temperature powdered milk. They ate the leftovers of that day's breakfast. They ate the leftovers of that day's breakfast for lunch, if any remained. The camp was a cluster of modular complexes with steel doors, surrounded by a million acres of uninhabited arboreal forest. Every day, between breakfast and lunch, the girls were responsible for collecting firewood. Since the area immediately surrounding the camp had been thoroughly scavenged, Tony and Hoppy's searches usually covered long distances. One morning, a sky wrapped in thin bandages dropped a steady column of snow, each flake a hollow prism that silenced Tori and Hoppy's footsteps and muted the spaces between their words. Rafts of snow slipped from the sagging clutches of the pines. Rafts of snow slipped from the sagging clutches of pines and tumbled to the forest floor. After a few hours of searching, Tori and Hoppy found themselves on the edge of an escarpment. Tori and Hoppy found themselves on the edge of an escarpment. Tori and Hoppy found themselves on the edge of an escarpment that looked over a valley. Below them, on the crumbled, snow-clogged banks of a dry riverbed, stood an abandoned Russian Orthodox church. One of its walls was caved in, and the cupola had collapsed. But along each of the building's three stories were rows of stained glass windows. All perfectly intact. Each piece of glass was like a jewel, hammered flat and individually cased in complicated lead frames, The ground floor windows depicted the Great Flood, with Noah's Ark bobbing in a turbulent sea. The second row of windows showed the capture, interrogation, and execution of Christ, and the topmost row consisted of swirling tetrahedrons that glimmered like the iridescent wings of a dragonfly or the oil-slicked surface of a flooded pothole. These undamaged windows were a miracle to Tori. They were like no stained glass windows she'd ever seen. The ironwork was impossibly fine and intricate, cupping small sections of bright glass, like a gap in a spider's web might frame two or three errant dewdrops. She pounced down the escarpment's side and skidded to a stop at the intact base of the cathedral walls. From where she stood, she could see angled rows of honey-colored pews that looked like they'd been rubbed with an oil, oiled cloth. Tori could see the sanctuary and the altar, where the pulpit stood on a mosaic of marble hexagons. She smelled incense, though the last services conducted there must have happened decades before she'd been born. There was a row of painted icons on the wall, each 3 feet high, two-dimensional figures in dazzling robes pressed flat against a background of gold leaf. The people in the pictures were posed stiffly, gesturing with flat, pale hands. These gestures seemed to have meaning, but Tori could not guess what it was. Moisture had seeped through the wall and blurred their faces into swirls of brown. It looked like someone had pulled burlap bags over their heads. Hoppy carefully picked her way down the steep decline and joined Tori's side.
"This shouldn't be here," said Hoppy. "Not this church, not this camp, none of it."
I think the church is pretty. Those windows are beautiful."
"It's very pretty," said Hoppy, "but it's wrong. And those windows? They're like every other part of a church. All those stories set
into fragile glass and metal and stone, arranged just so. But that's not really it.
"It's not really what?" asked Tori.
"Everything."
"Everything?"
She pointed at the windows. "Those things are trying to tell you everything. But they're not even close. And the worst part is that we're supposed to pretend we don't notice." Hoppy picked up a fist-sized stone and threw it at the topmost window. It sunk through the glass with a quiet chirp, as if it'd been gently sucked inward or even absorbed. It took great effort to even see the hole it had made.
"I feel like all of this has happened before," said Hoppy. "Us in these woods by this old church, plus everything else. I feel like we're stuck on a roller coaster that keeps circling the same tracks, and we change seats each ride. We're actors performing the same play each night, and each night we all switch roles. And sometimes I'm in the chorus, and sometimes I'm in the audience, and sometimes I'm a wad of gun, and sometimes I'm a wad of gum. And sometimes I'm a wad of gum stuck under a seat in the back row. I feel like we're characters in a book that keeps looping around itself."
"Isn't that how you feel, too?" Tori unclipped a flashlight from her backpack's strap and heaved it. The glass atomized into specks with the sound of a trillion tiny bells and formed a cloud of color that covered Tori's forearms and speckled her hair with innumerable microscopic fragments of beauty, each glinting hopefully in the day's pale light.
That's closer, said Hoppy.
It took Hoppy and Tori less than a minute to break every window, filling the air with broken pieces of sound and color. Glass floated to the ground in fine, sparkling flakes. Tori and Hoppy stood beneath the stream, looking up at undulating pillars of shattered rainbow. The glass descended on them like a slow fog, and their hearts filled with wonder because, until that point, they didn't know they lived in a world where something so beautiful could exist.